And thank you for tuning into Thursday Night Talk. This week, Brenda Starr is our host. Please give us a call. We love your contributions at 826-4805. If you're out of the area, at 1-800-640-5911. And to our text line at 492-KHSU. Now over to Brenda.
Thank you, Michael. And welcome to Thursday Night Talk. Before we get started, I think you might have heard the promo about California Red, Blue, and Green. And no, we're not going to talk about cannabis strains, but the idea of the Golden State becoming three separate states. And I have a politics professor et al., county supervisor, and also a gentleman who is from social relations. Before we get started, though, I want to just at least mention, put forth the fact that we've been talking about political football for the last week. This is the first Thursday Night Talk since we've had that political football that was brought out by the President of the United States. And we're not talking about the football that they call the codes to the nuclear arms. But I find that very, very interesting. On this show, I've had many, many conversations in regards to athletes in protest. Starting with Jesse Owens not dipping the U.S. flag in front of Hitler, Muhammad Ali, an anti-Vietnam war resister, and next year will be the 50th anniversary of John Carlos and Tommy Smith at the Summer Olympics protest. Many, many shows and many, many guests, and I just wanted to put that out before we even start, because I'm sure we're going to get into politics and political football at that. But first, I want to introduce my guests that are here with me. In the studio, I have Humboldt State University political scientist Kevin Lyle Murray and former county supervisor Mark Lovelace. On Skype, I think we have Humboldt State University cultural geographer Matthew Derrick. And if we don't, we will be getting him very shortly. Matthew is actually in Central Asia at the time. He's on sabbatical, so we're trying to get him here as well. First, I do want to say that Timothy Cook Draper is an American venture capitalist investor, and in 1985, he founder of the firm that would become Draper Fisher Jurvestan. One of the things that he did with that firm was to have little advertisements on the bottom of a Hotmail, and back in 1996, and one of the things that eventually led him to get a bit of money. In early 2014, Draper filed a petition, which was accepted by the California Secretary of State Deborah Bowen, to begin collecting signatures to divide California into six smaller states, arguing that California is increasingly ungovernable as one state. The plan fell short of the required amount of valid signatures to land it on the 2016 ballot. Mr. Draper spent in excess of $5 million to try to qualify that. And now the tech billionaire is back with another idea. Three Californias. And he has submitted paperwork that could put that proposition up to voters next year in 2018. Thursday Night Talk has not been able to contact anyone concerning the said paperwork, but we do have the following guests. Like I said, HSU political scientist Kevin Lyle Murray on Skype, which just as a back issue with Skype, that Draper's father, Bill Draper, was an early investor in Skype. And so the Drapers made out with a little bit of money when they sold that one. I think probably 10% of that $4 billion. I also have former Humboldt County Supervisor from the 3rd District, Mark Lovelace. And I want them to at least introduce themselves to those who might not know them personally. Professor?
Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for having me. We're looking forward to discussing some of the issues about the governability of California.
And tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Born and raised California native. Taught throughout the state of California, and as we were discussing earlier, I have relatives and have lived out in many of the different parts of California, Southern California, the Bay Area specifically, up in the Marin County area, Sacramento area, now up in what I have discovered is the true Northern California. So it's a great experience to not only study and research, as my specialty is California politics, but also to have lived in some of those areas to gain a better appreciation for kind of the mindset, the topography, the economics of the various places we call California.
And Mr. Lovelace, for those who are listening online and don't know who you are.
Well, thanks for having me on. I've also a native-born Californian, born and raised in San Jose, moved up to Humboldt County in 1989, so I've been up here for about 27 years now, and was on the Board of Supervisors for 8 years until this past December when I stepped down. And during that time, one of the things I was involved in was, after the 2010 census, was the redistricting process that happens based on those numbers. The state has a whole process for determining how we apportion our legislators, both our state legislators and our congressional representatives. And I was pretty deeply involved in that on behalf of our Board of Supervisors. So this issue of representation and how we go about ensuring fair representation is something that I've been involved in and certainly have a big interest in.
And Matthew, are you on Skype with us now?
Indeed I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Cultural geographer Matthew Derrick, welcome to Thursday Night Talk, and I'd like you to introduce yourselves to our listening audience.
Yes, well, greetings from Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan. People don't know where that is. It's in Central Asia, one of the five former stans that were part of the Soviet Union. I'm a geographer. I call myself a political cultural geographer. So I'm interested in the relationship between place and identity, the way we frame politics, spatialize it, draw borders, and this relationship between how that impacts culture and vice versa, kind of a dynamic relationship between a people and place. So that's generally broadly what I look at, and I've looked at the questions of political geography and cultural geography largely in the post-Soviet space, as I'm doing now, in Russia in particular, and now Central Asia. But since I arrived in Humboldt in the fall of 2011, I've got particularly interested in political and cultural geography in California. I guess I should interject at this point, say I'm a native of Oregon, a Southern Oregonian, but I'm not here to advocate for a Jefferson or anything along those lines. I've become a proud Californian in my six plus years in California at this point.
But we will be talking about all these intellectual conversations about the state of California breaking up or even merging with Southern Oregon here, which is just 60 miles from where we sit. Anyhow, welcome to the show. So let's begin with that intellectual exercise. I'm wondering, we had a little bit of a conversation before we started, and I'm going to let Kevin Lyle Murray begin the discussion because he talks about these things in his classes every day.
Yeah, the argument about California being ungovernable is interesting. I mean, let's clear away some of the important statistics that I think need to be honored. I mean, it's true, almost 40 million people, sixth largest economy in the world, epicenter for the world of technology, epicenter for agricultural, we're the breadbasket of the United States, leading in aerospace engineering, and then leading in entertainment. Those are four huge industries. Since I've been teaching politics, now almost coming up on 30 years, we keep stealing congressional districts from the rest of the country. As most are aware, that number was frozen in 1912. That's over 100 years ago since the House has been frozen. So now we're up to the unprecedented number of 53 representatives plus two senators. There's no other state in the union that's even in the 40s. Texas is at 34. New York's at 21. So it does give you a sense of, you know, we've got the population, we've got the income, we've got the wealth, and yet we're still limited to just two votes. As I pointed to my class, Texas, Florida, California, very populous states. And then you look at some of the smaller states, and there are several of them less than a million, and they get two senators. So from a political standpoint, I can see the valid argument of dividing us just for purposes of finally getting the power, both on the West Coast and in California in the Senate. Now, it becomes a lot more problematic, however, in trying to separate the state into equal zones of population and wealth. That's going to be, I think, the key variable. And the original effort to divide us into six, I think, would have never passed because Congress, which requires a two-thirds vote in each chamber to certify this, wasn't going to go for it because we'd be picking up too many senators. But the second round of limiting us to three section has a better chance of passing. We've also discovered that there's historically been a major shift, and the shift has been historically in the 1800s, it was the Southerners who wanted to separate. And there was three significant efforts that were put forth, one of which almost succeeded, but the Civil War intervened. That's the only reason we didn't become Northern and Southern California. Recently, though, what's been changing is now the Northerner counties have kind of led the banner, if you will, to separate into different states because less people, different topography. Although, interestingly enough, as we discussed earlier, they're probably benefiting more in terms of any kind of assistance they may be receiving because the economic numbers come from the Bay Area and from Southern California. Nonetheless, there's still an interest for them to break away. So we'll kind of tackle this with, from a political standpoint, we could benefit. But even if we got the votes, I'm going to argue that the Midwest and the East Coast would not be comfortable with California finally being recognized for both its population and its wealth, having more say in the political direction of the country from the Senate.
Okay, let's get back for a moment here to what the three Californians would roughly look like. Theoretically, equivalent populations and wealth. The state of Northern California would include almost the entire upper half of the state, including San Francisco. A Southern California would contain most of the rest. A third state, simply called California, would fold in Los Angeles and extend up the coast to Monterey. I facetiously, when I first read this article, I called it, well, California, Cantafordia, and Drill Baby Drillia. And it kind of almost looks that way to me as just a layperson who was just looking at the identity of where it was all laid out. Mark, you talked about aspirational identities. And I was wondering if you could expound on that a little bit because that would have to do with how the state would be, the identity of the state, how that theoretically is made up, wouldn't it?
Well, when I was talking before about aspirational identity politics, and we think of identity politics as people voting for someone that they can identify with, someone that guy's just like me. But as we saw with this last election, we've seen plenty of times before, but I don't think there's many people that say Donald Trump is just like me or that he really understands my plight. So they're not voting for him because he's like them. People who are feeling disenfranchised, who may have voted for him, probably voting for him because they don't like where they are. Their identity is aspirational. They want to be not depending upon assistance from the government. They want to be in that person, you know, as Donald Trump is, who is rich enough, powerful enough that he can say absolutely anything and get away with it. And people like that. People wish that were them. And so I think that plays into some of this, especially when we start looking at kind of the overlap between this three Californias and the state of Jefferson idea, which I believe is much more driven by, you know, it's not driven by rational economics or, you know, anything like that. It does not make fiscal sense. But it's the idea that we want to be on our own and that just that alone will be better for us. They don't want the economic arguments. They don't need that. It's just kind of a stomping your feet kind of position that some people are taking in that.
Well, I wanted you to interject that one before we start talking about regional identities and shared characteristics, because some of them are the same no matter where people will be living in this state. Matthew, you want to weigh in on this?
Sure. I'd like to kind of provide this a little, I guess, additional context here. What we're talking about here is an example of devolution of kind of politics and with a definite spatiality, a smaller scale politics. And this is kind of a I guess, a trend worldwide. We have a notable example of this past week with Iraqi Kurdistan voting for a sovereignty. There are examples elsewhere throughout the world. You think about Kosovo, South Sudan joining the most recent independent nation put on the political map. Other examples throughout the world. And we think about what do these have in common with those examples that I just brought up is the ethnic principle, a group of people who identify on distinct ethnicity that does not identify with a larger group and feels excluded, marginalized. There's a spatiality to this and looking to go their own ways. So we ask it, how is that similar? How is that different from California? Well, California, that's not the principle guiding this. So I think we need to ask, you know, what is driving this proposal at hand, and what has driven past proposals, you know, notably the six Californias. And we have a case right here of a person, a single person behind these, not a popular movement that is driving these proposals. So I think we need to kind of think about, again, place it within in the world context and ask ourselves what is really behind these proposals.
Yes, you're listening to Thursday Night Talk here. Just wanted to put out that your comments, feelings, questions, and concerns are welcome. Please give us a call here at the studio, 826-4805, toll free, 800-640-5911. If you don't want to be on the air, you can text us at 492-5478, and our engineer Michael will read them on the air. We welcome your calls. So, Matthew, getting back to, because you write a lot about regionalism and place-based identity. So when we're talking about the state of Jefferson, I can understand how that fits in. But when we're talking about three Californias, how does that fit in?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, I think we can kind of think of the kind of an us and them going out with the north-south divide, which is kind of longer standing, even when we had the Southern California wanting to earlier in the 20th century to secede from the broader California, then beginning at 41, and then more recently with Jefferson, Northern California, that north-south divide. And what we have there largely is kind of the rural-urban split, but also economics. You know, in the north, traditionally resource-based, extractive industries, whereas in the south, more kind of industrial, post-industrial type of economic activities. And what we kind of call here a core periphery issue going on, where the north being a periphery that pulls out resources and dedicates it to and sends it largely to the south for, I guess, higher level economic activities. So that's been traditionally the largest the split. But we also have a split kind of more recently, which might be more salient, is the coastal and then the inland split, kind of the classic, classic red state, blue state type of a division. And the proposals put forth by Draper addresses none of that. In fact, it reproduces the core periphery problem with, if we look at Northern California, we'd still have a Northern California dependent on an urban southern part of Northern California, the Bay Area. So he doesn't address that issue at all. He doesn't address the way that this would be divided up. It doesn't correspond to anybody's real mental maps of what California should be, new California should be. So this is a fundamental problem here with this issue of identity. I think we ask people, you know, what constitutes Northern California. People up in Humboldt and other parts of what we understand as Northern California, this does not correspond to our understanding of what Northern California would be. If we ask people what Southern California would look like, it does not correspond to what it looks like on this map that is being proposed by Draper. So we see a pretty strong disconnect between, I guess, if we want to talk about kind of regional identities and the political regions put forth in this proposal.
Mark?
And I think that, Matthew, you just identified one of the things that I think is the biggest shortcoming of this whole proposal, which is that it has emerged fully formed from the mind of one person. And if there are problems, no one's going to argue that there are problems with, you know, the functioning of the government. We're always trying to improve it. And that's the same with every state. To immediately jump all the way from there to say it's ungovernable, and then to jump from there to say the only possible solution is to divide it into three, and then yet they make another leap to say, and here's the only possible way to divide it in three, that this one person's come up with that. Even if we get to that idea that we should divide this up in some way, that should be something to be subject to a public process, to let each of the regions, the people of the state of California, have an opportunity to say, what is your identity? Who do you see, you know, you, your region as having affinity with? And when we went through this process after the decennial census, there was a whole process there. And the original proposal that emerged from the Independent Redistricting Commission was to link Del Norte, Humboldt, and I believe Mendocino east-west with inland counties. And our Board of Supervisors, and we heard a lot from other people in the county, a lot of input saying, you know, hold the phone. You know, we are aligned on a north-south axis along Highway 101. We're a coastal county, and that is our affinity, is with our neighbors to the north and south, not to the east. And we provided a lot of input. I went on behalf of the board to some of the meetings that were held around the state to weigh in on that, and eventually they came back to what we have now, which is the north-south district. Which both for our congressional district, our state senator, and our state assembly member. And that was something that emerged from the people of this region. And the same thing played out elsewhere around the state. So for one person to just believe that he knows better than everybody else, you know, really, it's strange to me that his proposal is based on the idea that we're getting poor representation, and yet his solution emerges with zero representation. There's no involvement from the public in crafting this solution.
And Kevin Lyle Murray, how would you grade his paper in your class, Tim Draper?
He's similar to Trump. He's good at tapping into a physical mindset that does exist in California. Let me explain what that is. In the northern counties of California, there's definitely a rural and rural environment. So I'm talking about Del Norte, Modoc, Glenn, Yuba, Sutter, for example, except for Del Norte, Siskiyou. All of these county supervisors voted to secede from California, not the people, but the county supervisors. In fact, Sutter voted 5-0. So there's this definite, and that harkens back to Jefferson. I remember when, it's funny, when they first said, hey, do you know where HSU is? We're going to hire you. Oh, yeah, that's Southern Oregon with a California address. Because I was thinking in terms of topography and weather, right? So there is that that he's tapping into, that Northern California, we're rural, and we want to break away from the Southern Californiaites. He may not be aware of it, but he's also tapping into a subliminal race issue, where we have a much more diverse population in the Los Angeles area than we certainly do in Northern California area. And so, again, he may not be aware of it, or he may be aware of this tacit, inert theme that's beneath the veneer that he could be tapping into to separate those two zones. It's interesting about the third area that you've described, from Monterey down to Los Angeles. To me, he was actually trying to be fair, at least in terms of population. But I absolutely agree. Monterey has nothing to do with Southern California. Those are two different worlds. I often remark in my class, isn't it interesting that the California flag flies in San Diego and the same day it's flying here on our campus? And what two different worlds those are. Mm. And it inevitably generates a chuckle for my class, most of whom, both in my class and on this campus, are all from Southern California. 40% of our population here on this campus.
I see the LA hats.
Definitely. So I asked them, what are you guys doing here? And they're like, Professor, we're taking a break from SoCal. We know we may have to return to the Bay Area and SoCal for our work, but for right now, we're going to be in this little liberal bubble community called Arcata, though we know we're surrounded by some very conservative mindsets because of the rural nature. So they're quite sensitive to that. So I think he, to summarize, he has tapped into that tension that exists in California based upon the physical geography. We've got the rural farming zones. We've got the Bay Area, very urbanites, very high-tech driven. We've got the Southern California, which in itself is so densely populated with services, I'm going to call it broadly. And so that's why it's so nice to get my Southern California students out of there to show them there's a whole other world. Mm-hmm. It's not just Los Angeles. So he's tapping into that. Whether or not he's able to make headway with it, and that means he's got to get a lot of consensus. I mean, you've got to get the state legislature to approve it. You've got to get the state population to approve it. Then you've got to get, as I said earlier, Congress to approve it.
Two-thirds.
And that's the other thing. That's super numbers. I mean, 218 out of 435 is hard enough to get. But when you're kicking it up to 290 or 67 out of 100 as compared to 51, very difficult. On the other hand, people may forget there are several states that we have, namely Kentucky, Tennessee, Maine, and West Virginia, that all came out of existing states. So the precedents are not denied. They are there. It could happen. And as noted by my colleague, where they're in Afghanistan, yes, there is a devolution movement. I'm thinking about Scotland getting closer towards its referendum, Puerto Rico getting closer towards its referendum to become the 51st state, or in the case of Scotland, an independent nation. So these are some evolving times, and maybe he's trying to tap into that new consciousness stream that sees an opportunity, even if it's not in the best interest of California to separate.
Well, Timothy Draper was born in San Francisco. He's about 50s, in his 50s now. Stanford educated as an electrical engineer, Harvard Business School as an MBA. And like I said, he's a venture capitalist from Silicon Valley. We have a caller, Mike from Willow Creek. Mike, welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you very much. I'm 66 years old, and I escaped Southern California in 1975.
Escape, I like that.
Never to return. I've lived in Oregon, California, Hawaii, and Northern California since then. I'm wondering if the state of California is indeed sixth in the economy of the world. Why would we want to split that up? Why not just take California and leave the rest of the country to Donald Trump? I'm just wondering if anybody's thought of the whole state removing themselves.
You mean the state seceding itself?
Yes. I'll take my answer on the radio.
I'll tell you why I think it's better that we stay.
You want to grill me.
I've heard that argument before, and I'll tell you why it's important California stays. California, as you know, given both our numbers and our economic prowess, it's critical that we stay because anything we experiment with in California can go national. That's critical. Mm-hmm. So that means if we could get, in the future, I believe we're going to be the first state to really get a great national universal health care. Once that's standardized and we can prove that it can work, not only because we've got the population, but the diversity, not just in the population and the topography. If it can work here, you can export it. So everybody knows that state governments are great experimental grounds for future national policy. So it's actually in our interest to operate like an independent nation, but still be affiliated with the United States, so that our standards, which, by the way, you should already know this, I'm sure you do, we have the higher standards with respect to air and water quality. We have the higher standards with respect to, in my opinion, housing oversight to ensure non-discrimination, and a whole litany of other accomplishments that other states typically are 10 to 20 years behind, certainly in technology. So as we continue to succeed, we bring the social consciousness of the rest of the country along. And that's why I think it's going to be a benefit.
Well, one of the things I remember hearing Nancy Pelosi say was, so goes California, so goes the nation. So talking to the only person who was elected official here, Supervisor Lovelace, what does make up state governability?
You know, that's a question that that's not really defined in this proposal to divide the state. And I wanted to get back to one of the things that Kevin said about the potential that this could create additional representation, or would create additional representation by way of two additional senators for each of the new states created out of this. But that's not the problem statement. And this isn't being put forward as a way to increase representation in Congress or in the Senate. This is put forward based on the statement, without any supporting evidence, that the state is ungovernable. And I really wonder about that. You know, my involvement in government started long before I was on the board, when I was working as an environmental activist and was going down to Sacramento or going to the Board of Supervisors here or going to state agencies. And for anyone that hasn't done that, I think people would be really, really surprised to see how responsive government really is. That you can go down to Sacramento, you can go into the Capitol building and go knocking on doors. You can go and knock on the governor's door. He may not see you, but you can go knock on his door. You can go knock on your own representative's doors, and you will almost always get time with at least a staff person to be able to convey what your issue is. And if you're well-spoken and can present your issue well, you're probably going to get that moved up the chain of command a bit. And you can even go down and attend any of the hearings that are happening on legislation and put your name in to perhaps be able to speak, depending on time allotments that are there. Government is very accessible. And to say it's ungovernable, I think the first step, if you're going to say that, first thing you need to do is you got to try. Try to work within the system that we have and try to make positive change. And you know, back to that idea that if that is your proposition, is that there are problems with the state, that it's ungovernable, there are so many options between that and break it into three pieces. And there's no thought process at all to get us from point A to point Z in this case. And there's so many other things that could be tried. Redistricting, which will be coming up again in just a few years after the next census. There's always legislative efforts underway to tweak this, tweak that. And there's just running for office. People that feel like they're not being represented, they should get involved and want to jump right in and start at the local level, start at the state level, wherever. There's so many different ways that any individual in California can be involved in being a part of government, a part of changing things, that to just put out that blanket statement that it's ungovernable, I just don't buy it.
Well, thank you for that, because I do want to recognize the fact that who you were in the community and what your passions were, that you decided to, well, I might as well run for something. Let me take this to my local community and expound upon that. And that's usually a desirable thing that people do. That's kind of how your political experience comes from.
One thing you might be trying to do, a quick interjection, is it is a good gerrymandering on his part if he can get what he's calling Southern California into a new state, because he takes a big chunk of Orange County and the desert area to the east, and then he goes up the valley.
Yeah.
And so from a political standpoint, that's a good move on his part, because there's in the Bay Area, it's a definite lock for the Democrats. If you can win the primaries, you're done. In fact, it was so bad, as you know, they had to go to a top two primary. That's the only way other Democrats could take out incumbent Democrats. It was so tight in that case. So I can see what he's trying to do on that level. The other challenge is, you know, here's a guy, I didn't know his background until you mentioned it. Now, I was raised on the Stanford campus. I got to work there for a year, and I know what a bubble that is, okay? So, and now he makes his money in the tech world. Now, I have argued for years, diversify California by getting these tech companies out of the Bay Area, out of the peninsula. And that's, so I can see why he's trying to create just an economic block, and that's one of his zones based upon economics. That creates all sorts of challenges. It's almost like an ethnic economic block. I've talked to some of these folks. Please, in fact, my hometown, Palo Alto, we actually got a no-growth city council finally in there to say, kind of talk about counterintuitive, we don't want any more companies coming here. And you hit a tipping point. Isn't that strange? Mm. And we'd love for them to come to Eureka and Arcata, at least some of them, not too many, because I still want to try to buy a house here before it becomes unaffordable. But the point being is there's so much wealth that regrettably is concentrated in a few zones in California, and that's part of maybe what he's striking at that's ungovernable, though his own economic wealth comes from that problem. So it's hard to push those CEOs to go to other areas when they don't see the talent's not there, they don't like the infrastructure's not there, and they may not like the weather, and they certainly don't like the fact that certain neighborhoods aren't there. I understand where they're coming from, but I don't agree with it. So that is really one of the deeper problems in California, is how to spread out the fantastic wealth we have so that we don't have the traffic of L.A., the traffic at the Bay Area, and the pollution that goes along with that. Separate issue probably, but I do think it's somewhat interrelated to how he can tap into why we're so different, because it is such a different world in the peninsula than it is here and as it is in Sacramento because of the economics. It's all driven by different economics, not just topography.
Once again, you're listening to Thursday Night Talk. If you're just tuning in, your comments, feelings, questions, concerns are welcome here. We're talking about the ungovernability of California and the Golden State becoming three separate states. You can call us at 826-4805, toll-free at 800-640-5911. If you don't want to be on the air, text us at 492-5478, and our engineer, Michael, will read them on the air. I'm here with Kevin Lyle Murray, with Matthew Derrick, and also with Mark Lovelace, and we do welcome your call. So, Matthew, at the end of what Kevin was talking about, I thought of you with regional and local strategies. So, in your background and your research, what are some regional and local strategies for this part of the world that you will be coming back to soon, I hope? what are some things that you contemplate?
Oh, what sometimes things that I contemplate?
Oh, yeah.
Before we address that, could I go back and just
absolutely.
Things that brought up. I also want to kind of a bandwagon on this idea, or against this idea, that California doesn't work. Is ungovernable. We see California, what are the metrics we use? If we use just simple economic metrics, we clearly work. We've got the largest economy. It's also been growing at a rate that is pulling the rest of the country along, coming out of the recession. We're leading the nation in certain ways, the world, in climate change legislation. We are extremely diverse, and we find a way to make it work. I mean, not always, obviously, but so this idea that California is ungovernable because of its cultural, topographic, economic diversity is just inaccurate, and it's kind of dangerous to start recycling these narratives that are created by tech billionaires ex nihilo. So I'd like to push back on that. And this idea that, you know, that a Southern Californian has very little in common with a Northern Californian is also, I'd like to push back on that a little bit and talk about this idea of a sense of territory. Something I do as a cultural geographer, just as a little hobby, is I collect tattoos, like geographic tattoos. You walk around, you see people with tattoos and geographic entities on their skin. But the most common you see is the state of California. California. This goes for a Southern California and Northern California. There is a definite sense of territory, and this is a worldwide brand with California, that silhouette, that polygon of California so famously. So I would be hesitant. What we have in common is California. It's been this experiment that we've been part of that's has been kind of leading the nation in certain ways, leading the world. I just want to caution against throwing that out the window. And what's being proposed, there is no sense of territory that in people's minds that correspond with what's being proposed. So I would like to make those points. And so to turn to this idea of what would replace kind of regional efforts. What do we have to jumpstart our economy in the north? Well, we have physical beauty, something that we need to emphasize. I think people are aware of and tourism is definitely one of our wonders that we could work on. We'll see what happens with marijuana with legalization. I have a feeling that we've been subsidized long time by prohibition. We'll see what happens there. But I don't know. I think probably our other guests could weigh on that a little more, and would like to hear what our listeners have to say on that.
Well, speaking of listeners, we do have a caller, Ariel from Arcata. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my question. My question is very simply, if we take California and split it into three different states or six different states or different sections in whatever way that may be the way that it ends up, if that's the case, I wonder what will happen to education? How will this impact education considering the boundary lines of public education and different kinds of educational systems for our children and even for our universities?
Good question. One little thing about the background of Mr. Draper is that he put an awful lot of money in for school vouchers one year when that was on a proposition. So, anyway.
Great question. Clearly, there's disproportionate wealth in California. And if we're divided into whatever regions, some districts are going to win and some are clearly going to lose, particularly the ones up here in the north. So, right off the bat, you're identifying that in the absence of the kind of equity that's created by gathering the resources from the Bay Area and Southern California and then distributing those back to those folks that simply do not have that economic base, or the property values is really what it gets down to, or the primary financing comes from the K-12, you're going to have huge distortions. So that is a huge issue. And it's, in fact, those distortions are already there. It's just going to make them more acute. And so that's a great question. That's to me, that's a good argument why you need to keep this block together as one.
And I think that's just a great illustration of why you have to have a process.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at what are the things that you want to balance. And there's more to it than just population and overall wealth. Those may in fact have little to do with what's an appropriate division of the state if, you know, we're determined to go there. The state of Jefferson example, if Humboldt and Butte counties didn't go along with that, there would be no four-year universities in the entire supposed state of Jefferson.
Wow.
So you know, these things have to be thought through to make sure that you've got not just the physical infrastructure of roads and natural resources and whatever, but you've got to have the intellectual infrastructure. You know, all of the different things that you need to have a governable state. So education is something that it needs to be fully thought through. Again, another argument for why you don't start with just jumping to this idea that here's a solution. Maybe we should identify a problem first before we identify a solution.
And we do have another caller, John from Petrolia. John, welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you. I'm calling because I do have some experience in government. I was on a water district board down in Central California for quite some time. And follow state and local politics pretty closely. It seemed to me the extent to which California is ungovernable is because of campaign financing and the blessings of the Citizens United decision.
Because we have more money?
Pardon?
Because we have so much money in this state that pours in?
No, because people need money to run their campaigns, so you have to listen to the people who give you money. And if you want to be a candidate, you have to have the stomach to go out and ask people for money, which is a lot of people who would otherwise be good politicians don't want to do.
Well, yes, and then there is that old thing about incumbents, I believe, looking at the statistics from 2016 election. I don't know too many people in the entire state that didn't get reelected that were not an incumbent.
Yeah, the incumbency rate is horrible, 95%. 98% in some of their polls. And unfortunately, you're absolutely right. Money was always in our system. But with the Citizens United, now we're awash in money. And as I tell my students, it takes me 4 months to roll out a class just called Interest Group Politics. But I can summarize it in one word. It's so expensive to run. I just had Jim Wood in my class on Monday, and I had State Senator Mike McGuire in my class on two separate occasions, and we all agreed that they hate having to go raise the money to go beg. But worse, let's face it, all of us voters, our only real power is our vote, are the block of our numbers. We can't compete against interest groups who are going to disproportionately influence the direction. Now, it can be argued that some of these interest groups are arguing in favor of employment strategies within a given congressional or assembly district. So I get that. But nonetheless, I'm going to argue that if a constituent calls your office and if a key donor calls your office, I think I have a fair idea who's going to answer the phone and who's going to get a form letter. And that's pretty much not just in California, but unfortunately the whole country. So, yes, you're right. That's one of the other key issues in California politics as well as national politics. Until we get to publicly funded campaigns, it's harder and harder for the constituency to really be reflective in many of the policies that come out of state and federal government.
And with that, that's something that would not change by dividing up the state.
Right.
Of course.
And yeah, that's something that's federally driven, and we're subject to it regardless. Other thing that wouldn't change, presumably, the starting point for each of these new states until such time as they have their own constitutional convention would be that they'd all be operating under the existing California Constitution. And so the timeline whereby new representation or dividing this into, you know, different three different states would result in real change to where they'd start taking on different personalities in terms of, you know, different regulatory climate, different economic climate, or whatever, is a very, very far horizon.
I'm not at all arguing for dividing up the state. I agree it would not help anything at all.
And I agree with you on that. I'm just pointing out that when we start getting at what are some of the actual problems that we have and take it from a problem-oriented approach, identify a problem, and then try to find an appropriate solution to it. Things like that, things like education that was talked about before, dividing the state up does not get us there. There was talk earlier on the secessionist movement, the mm-hmm. Cal Exit proposal that had been put out there somewhat loosely. And I couldn't agree more with what Kevin said, that, you know, I think California, even though it might be better for us to say, you know, for those of us that might want to say he's not our president, we're separate. One thing, first, it's only 8 years. We'll survive.
Theoretically, only four. Let's not jump the gun here.
At most, yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you for that, yes.
That could have been Matthew.
There's a limited amount of time into it, but also just that we have a responsibility not just to make sure that we're doing well for ourselves, but that we're doing well for the rest of the country.
Right.
And the idea of California being a leader and bringing the rest of the country along in our wake, there are so many examples of that, where California has been out on the, you know, the cutting edge of something to where the rest of the country is saying you're crazy. And 20 years down the line, this is the norm across the country, and no one wants to go back.
That's right.
So in many ways, if we do this, it dilutes the power that California really has. Even though we don't have the numbers in the Senate, it really dilutes our economic and social power that we can bring to the nation at large. So we're looking for ulterior motives here with this proposal.
Well, that would be my theory as an ulterior motive. Elizabeth from Arcata, welcome to Thursday Night Talk. You have a question, comment?
Hi, yes. I was wondering, so looking into this analyzation of separating California into three parts, it seems that there's a lot of social and economic pull to it, but how much is it social, economic, and or is it identity? Because I feel like there's a much more greater sense of identity that hasn't been talked about. That's my question.
Normally, I would say the identity thing, absolutely identify, pun intended, with what you're saying, because there is definitely identity to Northern California than there is to Southern California, no question. But what's interesting is the proposal put forward ignores that identity because he's trying to balance the wealth and population. So as one critique of it is an author from Stanford, a geographer there, said, hey, how do you want to group Monterey, even though it's along the coast, with Los Angeles? I'm sure Monterey is not going to be happy with that. So if we do the identity route, he's going to have to change his proposal just to include a section of the southern counties versus the central counties and then maybe the northern counties. That's about as close as you can get in terms of some of those identity issues that you've described. But maybe you can help me elaborate. Which identities do you speak of?
Well, we have in Northern Humboldt, we have cannabis, and that's being changed. And we have the timber, and that's also being changed. And I'm wondering how these different changes in Humboldt County, how are these changes are going to represent the rest of the three parts of California?
This is Matt. Hi, Elizabeth. I think I recognize your voice. I think you're touching on something here that is kind of at the heart of the problem with this proposal, is that it reproduces a number of the issues that have popped up with, notably, like, it reproduces again the north-south issue, the rural-urban issue, with what we call the core periphery issue. Again, you'll have an urban, if we look at what would be defined as Northern California, you know, places like Humboldt, places like Siskiyou, Del Norte, would still have very little political power in this, just by the way politics are arranged with the rural, less, very low populated areas, still having to contend with the urban areas to the south. So we talk about kind of rural, based on traditional extractive issues, decline of timbers, you talk, this would not address that at all. It would, in fact, reproduce it. The only thing we have left. So is that what you're talking about, Elizabeth?
Yes, that is correct. And also talking about the different ethnicities and how is that different when you have a small population of Latino community in Northern California, and you have the, you know, a larger population of Latino community in Southern California, and how these two different spaces are so far apart, and you have, you know, you have a different culture playing and meshing together. And I just wonder if separating California's three parts, if that would kind of amplify pulling cultures further apart.
Elizabeth, yes, and Elizabeth, I know that your research touches on this. I think, and one of our other guests, I believe it was Mark, touched on this. There is this kind of a latent, racism built into this proposal. It would separate, make California much less, well, the California is much less diverse, culturally diverse. By, you know, just look at a map. It'll separate the north and the south, and as you're touching, kind of rural Latino communities within Humboldt, for instance, would become a very, very small minority within the north, whereas in the south, you know, that we'd have that filtering out separation that I don't think that we would want to see. Is that what you're talking about, Liz?
Yeah, that is what I was thinking about. Like, I was feeling like, you know, it would actually kind of separate and create further, you know, binaries of different cultures and ideas of how California really is in general.
Right. I agree with you on point. That is something that would be definitely is not addressed when we talk in this proposal, and it would be this kind of sorting out separation, and it would kind of this impoverishment of diversity within the state.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. Before we get to our closing comments, Mark, did you want to comment on Elizabeth's question?
Well, there's been a lot of research about migration patterns, internal migration patterns in the United States, and I believe it's common elsewhere too, perhaps, which suggests that people are self-segregating into like-minded communities, that that's one of the biggest drivers of where people choose to live, is to find people that believe the same things that they do, that are like them in whatever way that may be. But I think that there's a mistake that's been made a number of times, certainly politically, to assume that the only polarity we're talking about in that way is the standard left-right, red-blue kind of
binary dualism.
When we start looking at all of the ways that we could seek to find, to keep intact communities in California, if we were going to go to that point of dividing it up, there's north-south polarities, there's the left-right polarities, there's urban-rural polarities, rich-poor, white and minority, coastal, inland. There's so many different types of polarities that we can look at in terms of how we want to approach this. And the only one that seems to be described in this is to avoid all of that and say we're just going to divide it into three states of equal population and equal wealth. And that ignores all of these aspects. And, so it again gets back to that thing of that we don't know how it might affect the issues that you were talking about, because that hasn't even been considered as a part of this proposal.
Final thoughts, Kevin?
Well, in certain closed, polite conversations of some of my Southern California brethren, they would actually say, we're going to surrender South California to the Hispanics.
Well.
Okay, and being half Hispanic.
Well,
and
the whole state can go back.
Right, right. So I can see where this also could potentially feed into some of that below-the-radar discussions that wouldn't be held in polite public conversation. So I understand some of the mindset where they would say, well, if we can just isolate ourselves away from Southern California, draw an imaginary line, say, got to be north of Madera and Fresno, so I would say somewhere along, probably the Bay Area north. There would be probably a segment of the less than educated population that would like to see that based upon racial divide. But what people need to remember is if the immigration trends continue as they are, California will look like the rest of the country by 2050. And so, again, here's an example where I really think our country will lead in that assimilation. And when I say assimilation, I don't mean one culture. I mean the diversity that comes out of, we all see ourselves as Americans, but we're all from different cultures, and we're proud of that, and we're not discriminatory against anybody else at the same token. So that's where I think it's powerful to leave California together. There's another good reason, because we can be an example that diversity is not only workable, but it's very governable, and we all succeed from it. And so, yeah, that would, to the point of the earlier caller, if we separate it, and some of these lines suggest that would – that would create further tension based upon, racial divides because of topography, because of these the northern state from the southern state is an example. So, yeah, that's a real issue, and that's not going to help anybody.
Well, to be continued. We will see if Tim Draper will get this through. We'll see if it is on the ballot. As I leave the studio tonight, I'll go home and watch the 10th and final episode of Ken Burns' PBS documentary on the Vietnam War. There are about 10,000 veterans in Humboldt County, with many Vietnam War and Vietnam-era veterans, and I am one of them. Next month on Thursday Night Talk, I have the fourth Thursday. My guests and I will broach the topics of war, peace, and refugees. Stay tuned. I'd like to thank my guests tonight. From HSU, political scientist Kevin Lyle Murray, and cultural geographer Matthew Derrick, our former Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace, our callers Mike Ariel, John Elizabeth, our engineer Michael, our KHU supporters, and you, the listener. I'm Brenda Starr, and until next time, peace, Frog.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. Thank you so much to our host, Brenda Starr. and to our guests, Mark Lovelace, Matthew Derrick, Kevin Lyle Murray, and to all of our callers this evening. We'd love to get feedback on our programs. Please email ThursdayNightTalk@khsu.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Next week, Sharon Fennell will be our host. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. My name is Michael. I've been your studio engineer tonight. Stay tuned to KHSU. It's 8 o'clock and No Room for Squares is coming up next.